Hey, everybody, and welcome to another deep dive. Today, we're going to be looking into the Book of Daniel,
Oh, yeah.
specifically those prophecies about the four empires.
Yes.
And we're very fortunate to have with us Dr. Wendy Witter to kind of be our guide.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, these visions in Daniel of like the statue with the different metals and those crazy beasts,
Yeah.
it just such rich imagery. I mean, I think it just captures the imagination.
Oh, absolutely.
But they raise so many questions like what did these visions actually mean
Right.
to Daniel and his original audience?
Yeah.
And are there any clues in there that might help us understand like the future or just kind of like those bigger themes?
Yeah, well, and I think a big key to understanding Daniel is understanding the time period it was written in,
Okay.
because you can't separate the prophecies from the historical context.
Right.
So to really grasp the weight of these visions, we have to kind of step back in time for a minute and picture what life was like for the Jewish people during this period between the Old and New Testaments.
So, like, set the stage for us. I mean, what was going on during that time? What was it like for them?
Okay, so imagine this. The Jewish people had returned from exile in Babylon.
Right.
They'd rebuilt the temple in Jerusalem, but they were far from free.
Oh.
They were still under the rule of powerful empires.
Uh-huh.
First, it was the Persians who were in charge, and then came Alexander the Great and the Greek Empire.
Wow.
And even after Alexander died, his empire got split up among his generals.
Right.
And two of these guys, the Seleucids and the Ptolemies, they basically turned Palestine into their own personal battleground.
Oh man, so the Jewish people were like stuck in the middle of this power struggle?
Exactly. They were caught in the crossfire,
Wow.
and it was a really unstable time for them, filled with all this turmoil and uncertainty.
I can see how that would shape their outlook. Like they were probably longing for that restoration that the prophets promised.
Absolutely. They were looking for any sign of hope, any glimmer of divine intervention that would set things right.
Right.
And that's where these visions of empires and the little horn come in.
Okay, so let's dive into those visions now.
Okay.
We've got Nebuchadnezzar's dream in Daniel chapter 2, where he sees this massive statue made of all these different metals. It's got a head of gold, a chest, and arms of silver, a belly and thighs of bronze, legs of iron, and then feet of iron mixed with clay.
Yes.
And then there's Daniel's own vision in chapter 7 of these four beasts. We've got a lion with eagle's wings, a bear with three ribs in its mouth, a leopard with four heads and four wings.
Oh,
And then
wow.
this really terrifying fourth beast with 10 horns and a little horn that comes out of its head.
It's a lot to unpack,
It
right?
really is. Like, talk about symbolism overload.
I know, but most scholars agree that those two chapters are actually describing the same four empires.
Okay.
It's just they're using different imagery to get the point across.
So, like, a lion represents an empire just like a head of gold does.
Exactly.
But the big question is, which empires are they talking about?
Yeah, that's where the debate gets interesting.
Okay, so walk us through the different
All
interpretations.
right, so there are a couple of main views on this.
Okay.
One is sometimes called the Greek view, which is pretty straightforward.
All right.
It says that the gold head lion represents Babylon, specifically King Nebuchadnezzar himself.
Okay.
Then you have the silver chest bearer, which represents the Medes as a separate kingdom that existed alongside Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon.
Interesting.
Then the bronze midsection leopard, that's Persia. And finally, the iron electrifying beast is the Greek Empire under Alexander the Great.
So this view really keeps things focused on those major empires that were around when Daniel was written.
Right. It aligns with the historical context.
Okay, but I've also heard about a Roman view.
Yes, the Roman view has been a pretty popular one for a long time.
And what does that one say?
It follows a similar pattern at first, with Babylon as the gold head lion,
Okay.
but then it lumps the Medes and the Persians together as one empire represented by the silver chest bear.
Okay.
Some folks even think that the three ribs in the bear's mouth could represent three major conquests.
Interesting.
Then you've got Greece as the bronze midsection leopard, with the four head wings potentially symbolizing the four generals who divided Alexander's empire after he died.
Makes
And
sense.
finally, the iron electrifying beast that's interpreted as the Roman Empire.
So the Roman view sees the prophecy extending further into the future.
Exactly. Even though Rome wasn't even a thing yet when Daniel received these visions,
Yeah.
and that's one of the challenges with this interpretation, like
Okay.
trying to fit the 10 horns of the beast into a neat timeline of Roman emperors or kings,
Right.
it doesn't quite work out
It
perfectly.
gets kind of messy.
Yeah, there are some details that scholars have to wrestle with.
And speaking of details, there's that whole little horn thing.
Oh, yeah, the little horn, that's a big one.
Like, who is this guy and why does it matter so much?
Well, in both of those Greek views that we talked about, the little horn, which appears in both Daniel chapter 7 and chapter 8,
right,
is generally interpreted as representing Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes.
Okay, and remind us again who he was.
Oh, he was a Seleucid king who ruled in the 2nd century BC.
Right.
And he really went after the Jewish people. I mean, he desecrated the temple in Jerusalem, tried to force them to abandon their faith.
So a real bad guy.
A total tyrant.
And so for those who hold the Greek view, both visions are talking about the same historical figure.
That's right.
Someone who would have been a real and present threat to Daniel's original audience.
Exactly. Like, they would have been reading this prophecy and seeing it play out right before their eyes.
Wow.
It would have been intense.
But the Roman view takes a different approach, right?
They do. While they also see the little horn in Daniel chapter 8 as Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes.
Okay.
They interpret the little horn in Daniel chapter 7 as a completely separate entity.
Oh, wow.
The Antichrist, this ultimate figure of evil who hasn't shown up yet.
So they're basically splitting the little horn into two different guys.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it.
And that has some pretty big implications, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because then you're talking about this prophecy having a future fulfillment as well as a historical one.
Right.
And it raises all sorts of questions about what that future fulfillment might look like.
So on the one hand, you've got the Greek view, which is all about historical fulfillment.
Right.
Like, this is a warning about a real danger that's happening right now.
Exactly.
And then on the other hand, you've got the Roman view, which adds this whole layer of future events,
yeah,
culminating with this ultimate showdown between good and evil.
It gets pretty intense.
It does. So we've got these two main interpretations, but you mentioned there's a third one, right?
Yeah, this one's a variation of the Greek view.
Okay.
And it tries to get even more specific about the timeline and the symbolism.
All right, so break it down for us.
Okay, so this view still focuses on those Greek empires, but it makes a distinction between Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon and the Medes as two separate kingdoms that existed simultaneously.
Okay, so it's adding a little more nuance to the timeline.
Exactly. And it also offers a really interesting explanation for those 10 horns on the fourth beast.
Oh, yeah. What about those?
Well, instead of seeing them as 10 kings,
uh-huh,
this interpretation suggests that they represent 10 different regions or states that emerged from Alexander's empire,
okay,
by the 2nd century BC.
So they're trying to make the symbolism fit more precisely with the actual historical events.
Exactly. They're looking for that consistency between the text and the historical record.
And where does Dr. Witter stand in all of this? Which interpretation does she find most compelling?
Well, she seems to lean towards that Greek view, especially that variation we just talked about.
The one that distinguishes between Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon and the Medes.
Yeah, that one.
Okay, and why is that?
Well, she finds it to be the most consistent with the text, especially when it comes to the little horn.
Oh, okay.
She prefers to see the little horn as having a single referent.
Meaning it's the same person in both Daniel chapter 7 and chapter 8.
Exactly. And that person is Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes.
So she's going with the historical fulfillment interpretation.
Yes, but that doesn't mean she rules out the possibility of future significance or echoes of these events.
Okay, so explain that a little more for me.
Well, just because a prophecy might have been fulfilled in the past doesn't mean it can't also have meaning for the future.
Right.
It's like those mountain ranges you see in the distance. They all look like they're right next to each other from far away.
Yeah.
But as you get closer, you realize there's actually a lot of space between them.
Okay. I think I see where you're going with this.
So even if we agree that the little horn primarily represents Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes, a real historical figure, could there still be a future dimension to this prophecy?
Like, maybe Antiochus is just one peak in a whole mountain range of fulfillment.
Exactly. That's where the idea of patterns and prophecy comes in.
Okay, so we're not just talking about a one-to-one match between prophecy and historical events.
Right.
We're talking about patterns, recurring themes, echoes of the past playing out in the future.
You got it. And that's what makes these prophecies so powerful and timeless.
Wow, that's a really interesting way to think about it.
Because they're not just about predicting specific events or pointing fingers at specific individuals.
Uh-huh.
They're about revealing patterns, highlighting the nature of good and evil, and reminding us of the ultimate victory of God's kingdom.
So even amidst the darkness,
yes,
even amidst those recurring patterns of oppression,
right,
there's still that glimmer of light, that promise of something better to come.
Absolutely. That's the message that sustained the Jewish people through centuries of exile and hardship.
Wow.
And it's a message that still resonates today.
It does.
Offering comfort and hope in a world that often feels chaotic and uncertain.
You know, this deep dive into the four empires has really opened my eyes.
I'm glad to hear that.
We've gone beyond just matching names and dates,
uh-huh,
and started to see those bigger themes, the patterns, the enduring relevance of these prophecies.
That's what it's all about.
It's like we've zoomed out from a close-up to a wide-angle lens.
I love that analogy.
And we're capturing this more expansive view of history and God's work in the world.
It's amazing what you can see when you shift your perspective.
It is. But it also makes you wonder, you know, if history is destined to repeat itself.
Oh, yeah.
Could a figure like Antiochus IV, who seemed to embody such a potent form of evil, reemerge in a different form at a different time?
That's the question, isn't it?
It is.
And there's no easy answer.
Right.
But what we can say is that the Book of Daniel and prophecy in general isn't just about predicting specific events or pointing fingers at specific individuals.
Okay.
It's about revealing patterns, highlighting the nature of good and evil, and reminding us of the ultimate victory of God's kingdom.
So it's less about a literal replay of history,
right,
and more about recognizing those timeless truths, those enduring themes that these prophecies embody.
You nailed it. It's about understanding the spiritual forces at play in the world.
Okay.
That constant tug of war between light and darkness.
Uh-huh.
And that's a message that speaks to every generation, no matter what the historical circumstances are.
That's a powerful thought.
It is.
This has been an amazing deep dive.
Oh, I've enjoyed it.
We've explored the historical context, wrestled with different interpretations.
Yeah.
And pondered some pretty deep theological questions.
It's been a rich conversation.
It has. I honestly feel like I have a whole new appreciation for the Book of Daniel.
That's wonderful to hear.
It's definitely not just some dusty old text.
Oh, no, it's so alive.
It is. And I hope it inspires our listeners to keep digging deeper into the Book of Daniel.
Yes.
Keep asking questions and keep searching for those nuggets of wisdom that these ancient texts have to offer.
There's always more to discover.
There is. But before we wrap up this first part of our deep dive,
okay,
Dr. Witter brings up another point that I think we should explore.
Oh, I'm all ears. What's caught your attention?
Well, she talks about how just because a prophecy might have been fulfilled in the past, it doesn't mean it can't also have meaning for the future. It's like those mountain ranges you see in the distance. They all look like they're right next to each other. But as you get closer, you realize there's actually a lot of space between them.
Oh, that's such a good analogy. Yeah, it's like you might see a historical event as fulfilling a prophecy.
Right.
But that doesn't mean it's the only time it's fulfilled. It could be just one peak in a whole mountain range of fulfillment stretching into the future.
So even if we agree that the little horn primarily represents Antiochus IV Epiphanes, a real historical figure.
Yes.
Could there still be a future dimension to this prophecy?
Absolutely. And that's where this whole idea of patterns and prophecy comes in.
Okay.
Like Antiochus IV, as bad as he was,
could
be seen as a foreshadowing of a future enemy, maybe even worse.
Oh, wow.
Kind of like a blueprint for that man of lawlessness described in the New Testament.
So we're not just talking about a one-to-one match between prophecy and historical events.
Right.
We're talking about patterns, recurring themes, echoes of the past playing out in the future.
You got it. And that's what makes these prophecies so powerful and timeless. You know, they speak to the human condition,
right,
to that constant struggle between good and evil, to the hope for ultimate redemption.
Yeah.
It's like they give us a glimpse into this grand narrative of history,
uh-huh,
encompassing both the past and the future.
And that reminds me of something Dr. Witter said about how even after Antiochus IV was gone, God's people continued to suffer.
Yes.
It's like that pattern of oppression and persecution, of a defiant power rising up against God and his people.
Right.
It's like it's woven into the fabric of human history.
It's a tough truth, isn't it? But I think it's important to face that reality.
Yeah.
We see it throughout history and even today. But here's the thing.
Okay.
The Book of Daniel also offers a message of hope.
Okay.
It points towards a final victory, an end to suffering, a time when God's kingdom will be fully established.
So even amidst the darkness, even amidst those recurring patterns of oppression,
yes,
there's a glimmer of light, a promise of something better to come.
Exactly. That's what it's all about.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah, me too. You know, that's the message that sustained the Jewish people through centuries of exile and hardship.
Right.
And it's a message that still resonates today, offering comfort and hope in a world that often feels chaotic and uncertain.
You know, this deep dive into the four empires has really opened my eyes.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
We've gone beyond just matching names and dates.
Uh-huh.
And we've started to see the bigger themes, the patterns, the enduring relevance of these prophecies.
I love that.
It's like we've zoomed out from a close-up to a wide-angle lens.
That's a great way to put it.
Capturing a more expansive view of history and God's work in the world.
It highlights what makes studying prophecy so fascinating. You know, it's not just about decoding a secret message,
right,
or predicting the future. It's about engaging with the grand narrative of God's plan.
Yeah.
A plan that unfolds across time and includes both the past and the courtship.
It's like we're getting glimpses of this giant tapestry being woven.
Yes.
Seeing how all these different threads, different events, different people all connect to create a larger, more intricate design.
It's mind-blowing, isn't it?
It really is. And it makes you think about your own place within that tapestry.
Oh, yeah.
How your life, your choices, your actions all contribute to the unfolding of God's purposes in the world.
Absolutely. We all have a part to play in this grand story.
It makes you wonder, though, if history is destined to repeat itself.
Mm.
Could a figure like Antiochus IV, who seemed to embody such a potent form of evil, reemerge in a different form at a different time?
It's a question worth pondering.
It is. Is that what these prophecies are warning us about?
That's the question, isn't it? And there's no easy answer. But what we can say is that the Book of Daniel and prophecy in general isn't just about predicting specific events or pointing fingers at specific individuals.
Right.
It's about revealing patterns, highlighting the nature of good and evil, and reminding us of the ultimate victory of God's kingdom.
So it's less about a literal replay of history.
Right.
And more about recognizing those timeless truths, those enduring themes that these prophecies embody.
You nailed it. It's about understanding the spiritual forces at play in the world.
Okay.
That constant tug of war between light and darkness.
Uh-huh.
And that's a message that speaks to every generation, no matter what the historical circumstances are.
This has been an amazing deep dive.
Oh, I've loved exploring this with you.
We've explored the historical context, wrestled with different interpretations, and pondered some pretty deep theological questions.
Yeah, it's been a rich conversation.
It has. I honestly feel like I have a whole new appreciation for the Book of Daniel.
I'm so glad to hear that.
It's definitely not just some dusty old text.
It's so relevant for us today.
It is. Well said. So to all of you listening out there, we'll leave you with this final thought. Could Antiochus IV, while a historical figure, also be a foreshadowing of a future more formidable adversary? Or is history destined to repeat itself in different forms? We encourage you to keep exploring these ideas, keep seeking understanding, and keep the conversation going. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the Book of Daniel. It's funny, we often think of prophecy as being all about the future, but it seems like the key to understanding these visions in Daniel is actually the past.
Oh, totally. You can't separate those things. The past really informs how we understand the future.
It's like Dr. Witter said, understanding that period between the Old and New Testaments, what scholars call the intertestamental period, is crucial. It sheds light on how those early audiences would have interpreted these prophecies.
I think that's so important for us to remember as modern readers.
Like, imagine you're a Jewish person living under the rule of the Seleucid Empire.
Yeah.
And you're seeing Antiochus IV Epiphanes doing all these terrible things, desiccating the temple, trying to stamp out your faith.
Right, right.
And then you read Daniel's visions of this little horn figure who sounds a lot like Antiochus. We'd be like, whoa, this is happening right now. Is this the fulfillment of the prophecy?
It would have been mind-blowing for them to see those connections.
Totally. But here's where it gets even more interesting.
Okay.
Even though these prophecies might have had a specific historical fulfillment, Dr. Witter suggests they also point to a broader pattern.
Uh-huh.
She talks about how these visions in Daniel, especially those dealing with the little horn, might foreshadow future adversaries who embody that same kind of arrogance and opposition to God.
That's a really fascinating idea. It's like Antiochus becomes this prototype for future bad guys.
Right. Rulers who try to exalt themselves above God and persecute his people.
Exactly. And sadly, that pattern doesn't end with Antiochus.
No, it doesn't. We see it throughout history, don't we?
We do. Leaders who rise to power fueled by ambition and pride, seeking to control and dominate others, often at the expense of those who follow God.
It's a sobering thought.
It is.
But I think it makes these prophecies even more relevant today.
I agree. It's like a warning, a reminder to be vigilant, to recognize those patterns of power and oppression, and to stand firm in our faith even when things get tough.
Totally. And that's where I think that message of hope in Daniel becomes so important.
Oh, absolutely.
Even though we see this recurring pattern of evil, the book ultimately points towards God's victory, towards the establishment of his kingdom, where justice and righteousness will prevail.
It's a reminder that even in the midst of darkness, God is still at work.
So it's not just about doom and groan. It's about holding on to hope.
Yes.
Trusting that God is working behind the scenes, even when we can't see it.
That's such an important message, especially in times of uncertainty and turmoil.
It is. This has been an incredible journey through the Book of Daniel.
It really has.
We've uncovered so much about these prophecies, the different interpretations, the historical context, and even their relevance for us today. I feel like we've just scratched the surface, though.
I agree with you. There's always more to learn, more to explore, more to discover in these ancient texts.
They're like a bottomless well of wisdom and insight.
That's a great way to put it. They really are.
Well said. So to wrap things up, I want to leave our listeners with this. What do you think? Could Antiochus IV, this historical figure who caused so much suffering, also be a foreshadowing of a future adversary? Or is history destined to repeat itself in different forms?
Such good questions to reflect on.
We encourage you to keep pondering these questions, to keep digging deeper into the Book of Daniel, and most importantly, to keep seeking truth and understanding.
And don't forget to share what you're learning with others. These conversations, these deep dives, are meant to be shared. Thanks for joining us today.